Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show portion of the Super Stream here on a terrible Tuesday. JC Sherbert over there, Phil Mad Dog Mullinax in over here. Been talking some football there. A lot of football, JC. I love this time of year. We get to shift gears and start recklessly speculating about rosters and usage and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Reliving all the terrible memories of coming off a 4-8 season. It's been kind of marked by some up and down stuff here in Beamer's tenure, but man, it's been a freaking roller coaster. Like the highs, the lows. I mean, my goodness, it's very manic.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I can take that. You know, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I've always said about Beamer, you know, he's not his dad, but he's the overall ideas about the pro. I mean, he's taken a lot from Frank Beamer, and you know, Virginia Tech wasn't necessarily inconsistent. They were very consistent once they kind of got some kinks ironed out. You know, it was year after year six. I mean, Frank Beamer would have been fired quickly. And then in that tenure, he went 2-8-1 in year six. And then after that, the rest was history. But, you know, one thing that the Virginia Tech teams always did, I felt, was they would have a bad game. They would have a game where you're like, what in the world's going on? And they would escape, barely win. Maybe they'd lose a game they shouldn't. I remember, was it James Madison or old? It was James Madison went in there and beat them
in
an opener one time. The team finished 11-1, I think, or 10-2. They bounced back. And this is, you know, but you know, you put Virginia Tech in the SEC, maybe it's a little different story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, that the team that Tech took up to Ohio State to beat the national champions, I think, that year, Urban Meyer.
Well, it's interesting because you could probably count on, you know, one hand, the most consistent teams in this current era of college football, right?
I mean, Kirby's consistent at Georgia right now. Mm-hmm. You have,
Ohio State. Alabama.
Right. Ohio State's pretty consistent. But yeah, it's not, I mean, even LSU, you know, as blessed as they are with the setup down there,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've put up some 6-6 seasons out there, 8-5s and fired coaches. I mean, it's hard, you know, but I do think that, you know, the what gets people about Coach Beamer and not me, this is not a criticism coming from me. I'm just pointing out the reality. I think he's done a pretty good job. I thought that as the losses piled up last year, particularly after A&M, that, you know, you lose at home to Coastal Carolina, that's a problem. That may be an issue, but other than that, I mean, and lose that Clemson game was ridiculous, as I just pointed out during the crosstalk. But, you know, hey, let's just go try and fix it other ways and not blow this up right now, because there's a lot of really freaking good players around here, and the problems can be – you know, that you're saying the problems can be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. But, you know, so it's not really a criticism of me. I mean, he's two games off the pace of Steve Spurrier through his first 5 years. Steve Spurrier, what got them going the year they broke through. And it's kind of, you know, nobody was talking about Coach Spurrier getting fired, right? Hmm. But there was some pressure with that 2010 team, Phil, because – you know, once they beat Georgia in week two, and I think that year Georgia was not, they weren't, I don't know what Georgia, I think Georgia finished 6-7 that year. Mm-hmm. Lost to UCF, or 7-7, lost to UCF at the Liberty Bowl. Georgia was not very good. Florida was back down to earth under Urban Meyer. The whole 2010, the division, that was before Missouri joined the league, was just not very challenging.
Right.
So to speak. You know, Tennessee was not very good. And so you almost felt like, well, you know, Carolina could win this thing. And every game that year, I remember when they lost to Arkansas, because the West was just so much better. I remember they lost to Arkansas at home by 21 points. and Ryan Mallett and that crew.
Yeah.
And they got to go to Florida the next week with the East on the line. Now, Florida, had Florida won the next week, had Carolina beaten Arkansas, Florida won the next, Florida still wins the division. So it was still winner take all. But that game going to that Florida, there's some pressure. Now, in Spurrier's genius, you know, they called, I think Chris Lowe or somebody called him. The game was a night game, and he's like, hey, I'm here at the Ocala Holiday Inn or whatever. At the hotel, getting some sun. Shoot, he was out there enjoying the Florida sunshine.
Having a good old time. Yeah.
And Axel, Axel was, Axel. I just read something.
I know, you're looking at the box.
So I got Guns N' Roses on the brain. Spurrier was good with that. But, you know, by year six, it was like, I'll go back to another year six. Haven't been a lot of year sixes around here. It's Lou Holtz that and Strickland, you know, that team. You know, 63-17 happened the year before. Holtz retooled his staff. Nobody knew what to expect. They went to Vandy, kicked the snot out of them. But that team, you know, there was some it was stressful because, you know, and back then the goals were a little different. It wasn't to get to Atlanta. It was to get to a bowl. And they did beat Arkansas late in the year. Remember Troy Williamson caught a pass, I think, from Savelle. Little out pattern and went in the end zone. They won 35-32. I was at that game with my friend, the late great John Manning V Horn. They got to six wins. It's like a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
And you feel the same way going into this year six, regardless of what happened at the end of last year. And so, you know, and look, bad things happened in all of those heading into year six at 63-17 in 04, in 09. Things were hunky-dory because they gave the national champion Gators all they wanted, or the defending national champion Gators all they wanted at home, and should have beaten them. And then they did beat the ACC Atlantic champs Clemson. But then guess what? A little thing called the PapaJohns.com Bowl happened.
Oh, God.
And it was like, so that left a sour taste in people's mouth. And so there was a lot going on and going into those year sixes. And same thing with Shane Beamer. You had a bad year that did ended badly.
Yeah.
And that Clemson loss was a bad loss. I'm still going to maintain that. But you know, there's been some fixes. Spurrier added Marcus Lattimore. Marcus was the difference, obviously, in 2010. It was kind of the same team as 09.
Right.
You know, Alshon was in his second year. You had Stephon Gilmore. It's very beneficial when you have a running back that can go for 200 yards on 40 carries. You know, that helps. Sean Elliott came in that year too and had kind of that inside zone run game that they put in. So it was a little scheme tweak. I think that there are with Gamecock Nation and especially inside the there are expectations this season. Maybe that are greater than the outside and they're real.
Right.
You know, and there's not a lot of margin for error. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. As far as this goes. So, I think that that's just kind of how it sets up, you know, Cam in the, McKellar Enterprises chat box mentioned dual threat quarterbacks, Kamario Taylor. I think number one, yes, the game scares me too. Not just cause it's Taylor, but because Mississippi State has, gosh, I don't know who they had the first game, but they got a road game at Minnesota. Minnesota's going to be very physical. So they're going to kind of know what it's like to get hit in the mouth by a big, strong, physical team, even if they win.
Yeah.
Carolina's got
Monroe.
Louisiana Monroe is still probably a little tougher than Kent in the South Carolina Heat.
Yeah, that's and true.
Towson, who some didn't even know they had a football team. I mean that, you know, so they're going to be a little battle test. I've seen it before I've seen this with Tennessee. Tennessee will go roll somebody 70 something. Missouri, when Josh Heupel was there, next week, you play somebody really, you know, on your level, can't move the ball. It's not as easy, yeah, a little bit harder. You're not used to it. So in many ways, it's like an opening game. Whereas Mississippi State's going up there. I think number two, there's no surprises on offense. because they run the same offense. You know,
true.
That, and hey, that helps Zach Arnett, but also helps Clayton White. You know, you know, Kamario Taylor, kind of, you know, same type of guy as Lenore Sellers. Where I think Carolina has a decided advantage in that game is South Carolina's defensive personnel is superior
to
Mississippi State's. So that may even be a game. I'm just speculating here. This is my stupid brain, right? I'm just speculating. That may be a game where Kendall Briles may just not run tempo and protect the
defense. Just get the lead and protect it.
Now you run the risk of giving up points, you know, that situation. But if you get the lead, you know, if you get up by a little bit, defense is playing well, maybe protect it a little bit because they're playing well. I don't know.
All right. That's an interesting week three.
That's an interesting game because it's like there's some familiarity, there's scheme familiarity with it. And, you know, Mississippi State's probably not coming to town thinking they're going to lose, which is why I think the best thing that could happen to Carolina is for Mississippi State to just beat the snot out of Minnesota. And then everybody locks in.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to be feeling good and confident if they beat Kent and Towson like they should and empty the bench, you know, and practice the next week. Everybody got to play. Maybe a fourth teamer or walk on got a touchdown. Everybody's trying extra hard.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can get overconfident in this game really quick. And people aren't going to be talking about Mississippi State being much of a challenge if they lose to Minnesota or if they escape from Minnesota or whatever. I mean, and that's a scenario where you're just not quite there. You're just a little bit overconfident. And then Kamario Taylor's running past you and they've scored the first 21 points before you wake up and you can't catch up. And that's that. So I hate to invoke nightmares from some people. So, Craiger, did I call the Clemson quarterback Vinzini again? I'm going to do that all year. Vinzini.
Yeah.
Vinzini.
Vinzini. Like
Vinzini's more of a pimp name, though.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Visney and my brain's dying. You know,
the great Vinzini.
Princess Bride.
Oh, Vinzini. Cam says something about Carolina mobile quarterbacks. Yes, well, I did pull up these stats. So Trinidad Chambliss last year did not have his best game against South Carolina. The Gamecocks held him to 3.9 yards per carry. Really, outside of a couple of nice runs, they kind of bottled him up. Now Lacey went nuts for 167 on 24 carries. But Trinidad, they handled him pretty well. You got to scheme them up. The other question about Mississippi State is their offensive line. Matt Anderson did some research into their metrics. They do have some names up there. DJ Chester, who was at LSU. I think two of the Coast kids from LSU, Carolina was looking at, will play for them. One of my underrated running backs, Fluff Bowl, is there. So, I mean, they're formidable. It's a game Carolina absolutely should win. But it is they're all scary until they're not, until you see exactly what you got. And the scary part, all right, so let's say Carolina opened with Towson. Let's put Kent at the end of the year. Let's say Carolina opened with Towson. And then, or hell, even Miami came in, right, for the opener. Great, let's do that. Let's just let Miami come on in. Let's go back. Open with Towson. And then let's say Vanderbilt was on the schedule. So they went up to Nashville. You know, you lost to Vandy last year. It's a scary place to go sometimes, especially early in the season. But you go up there and have that game, you feel better about coming back home from Mississippi State.
Right.
Because you know, you're like, okay, well, you know, we had this team that was pretty good. We know we can play in the SEC, whatever. But having those two games and then, boom, here anybody on the SEC schedule is going to be scary in that scenario, in my opinion. So, Ghost Flame mentioned the sponsors. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ghost Flame also says he's feeling confident. I know it's a mistake, but what the heck? Exactly.
You know, there are signs out there. I mean, there's no confidence is not misplaced for this team. when you look at the roster and the schedule as a whole. Like, but you know, you may want to temper that.
Yeah, I don't. Look, no problem being confident, right?
No,
and it's an admission of how it sets up on paper, you know, and people are actually looking on paper to say that. Now, some writers out there are certainly not. Some writers live a fact-free existence as the mayor of Hot Takeville.
That's right.
And I'm sorry, they live in a fantasy. What was it? They live in a fantasy land where they're the mayor of Hot Takeville. Blew up on X yesterday. We'll talk about that after the break. So cue the music, Philip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize I'd talked that long about Mississippi State.
It really wasn't that long. We started late. Ran a little long.
TD keeps talking. Everybody keeps talking about 8 wins. I think you can do a little better than 8 wins.
I think so too. I mean,
but Brett, I mean, Nauspia
said it was, you know, that was the ceiling. I'm like, I don't know.
Who said it was the ceiling?
Pick Six Previews, Brett Ciancia.
Oh, he's wrong.
Yeah,
that's not the ceiling for this football team. I mean, when you talk about ceiling and floor, you're talking about if everything goes right, you're 8-4.
Yeah.
If everything goes right for these guys. But the thing is, in most seasons, there are things that go right. And this is for all teams. Things that go right.
Things that go wrong.
Things that go wrong. For example. And I wrote about Caleb Herring today. Oh, so Caleb Herring, we think he's going to be pretty good. What if he's not great? You know, what if that's a deficiency over there and you got him or a freshman and Walker or somebody gets hurt? And so you're so-so on the other edge. You know, what if, you know, coverage in the secondary leaves a lot to be desired? You know, what if the offensive line still struggles, not as bad as last year, but still an issue? What if these running backs aren't as good as you think? What if the receiving corps gets the case of the drops and you're running tempo and you're dropping the ball? What if Sellers can't? What if he makes a ton of mistakes, gets benched? There's scenarios, man.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, it's plausible. It's not, it's not likely, but it's plausible. It's like football is an allegory of life. Derek Moore says that.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much so is, because you have to prepare for all contingencies in football as in life. I'm going to get to some more things from the McKellar Enterprises chat box. Craig told me to shut up. Craig also said this about Guns N' Roses. I hope Axl's drinking his honey hot tea. I really want the show to be a good experience for you. Yeah, he's getting better. Like, I've looked at some clips from this world tour versus the last where he's really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting better. He's like, singing wise, he's staying. He's being a little more selective with, like, when he goes into his falsetto, which is awesome. Yeah. And it sounds more like the Axl falsetto. Also, this is genius. Guns N' Roses used to do background vocals. Like, they used to have the 976 horn section with backing vocals with the Use Your Illusion tour. But it was Axl would sing. Duff would be in backup sometimes. But the females would just come in like November Rain or something like that. They have some female background vocals. I don't know if it's Melissa Reese on the keyboard or who it is, coming in with background when he hits the high a little bit.
Kind of prop it up
bit. It sounds really good. I like what they're doing. I'll have a full report from the show when I'm back on Friday. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too. I hadn't seen them since 16. But, my friend Ryan Bartow and I went and saw just Axl's band out in Vegas in 14.
Yeah.
We had a blast, dude. It was a blast.
You know, it's going to be a great time. Public Enemy, too, man.
Public Enemy. Like, Andrew Dice Clay opened for them in Vegas. And then Nicolas Cage introduced the band. And we were front row. Our friend Scott got us in front row. You can be on the front row at GameCockTraditions.com to get your Nike gear. Check that out. Also, we love D's Wings around here. And don't forget to subscribe to thebigspur.com. Half off for a year after you start a $1 free trial. We'll be back after this on the show.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks of the show. Final segment of the show here on a terrible Tuesday. Oh, look at that. Oh, sorry, I got distracted. I have an appointment after the show on Monday with a specialist, JC, and I got I don't know. They offered me a wait list position that just opened up, but can't make that either. So we'll just maintain our Monday appointment at 3 o'clock. I've already been waiting, 6 weeks. So what's another 4 days?
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, no doubt. It's fine. Your arm could be falling off.
Yeah, that's, I'm all right.
But all right. So yesterday on X, Jesse Simonton, I guess is this guy's name. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I know who he is. He's worked for everybody under the sun, kind of. And consistently, I've read a lot of some of his stuff just because it's been out there over the years. And he's consistently one of the worst writers. If he has a good mind for this, he doesn't come across in his writing. I haven't heard much of what he says. I guess he's on Feinbaum for some reason, but he's just one I think is awful that really probably should make some changes to figure out, how he's communicating things. Not necessarily a hot take artist, more of a bad take artist. This article he wrote about Beamer is, a fair overall point to make, but the meat on the bone is rotten, so to speak. Or rubber. It's not even meat. We talked about McDonald's earlier.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not even meat. It's fake. It's not real. So it got everybody fired up. And somebody actually made a clown picture of him. And I'll just remind everybody that clowns are people too.
I saw that.
he may make the list.
Well, we might need to freshen that up for the new season.
But okay, so Shane Beamer's South Carolina future is almost certainly going to end badly. All right, so fine. You want to say that? That's fine. South Carolina's in the SEC. South Carolina could have a really good team and lose 7 games. And it's because everybody else is really good. It depends on what happens that day. It's perfectly fair. I'll also remind everybody that, Paul Feinbaum said Beamer would be the next coach to get fired. And Paul always says stuff like that. And it's because there's nobody else to talk about. I've said this over and over again. Who else in the SEC are you going to talk about getting fired? Who else had a disappointing year last year that either didn't get fired or that were, they were just kind of starting out? Nobody. Mark Stoops would be at the top of this list had they retained him at Kentucky.
Yeah, that's right.
Billy Napier, certainly. Brian Kelly certainly would be. I mean, they all got fired. You got 6 new coaches, and then the other 9 guys had good years. So he's got to be at the top, right? I mean, people are throwing around Josh Heupel and Steve Sarkisian, and we've had a 12-team playoff 2 years. Those guys are one of the few coaches that have taken their team to the 12-team playoff. I mean, Sark won 10 and Heupel won 8 last year. I mean, who are you going to pick besides Shane Beamer is my point. And he's also going into his 6th year. It's not like he's just got there. So I get that. And I've talked about it all summer. And trust me, the coaching staff has talked about it with recruits all summer. I'm not even going to say don't write about it because you got to write about something, right? It's the SEC and hot seat lists, which lead to coaching changes, get views and all that. And if you just have a Substack and, you want people to kind of read, that's fine. And I even hate that I'm giving it attention, but I didn't want to give my 2 cents. And also point out this guy's constantly full of bad takes. The thing about bad takes or takes, they're not takes you disagree with. Okay. I can fully disagree with something and say, but you know what? They brought facts and it was fair. Okay. Because when you bring facts to make your point, even if I don't agree with how you assembled those facts, it's fundamentally fair. It's not fair when you just don't know what the hell you're talking about and you try to do it. Because then that's called an unfair attack. That's like, a drunk girl fight at a bar where the chick just starts throwing insults and making stuff up at the chick she's trying to fight because she's totally upset. Guys can do it too. I see more girls just verbally attack. So it starts out, Shane Beamer has some real love it or hate it quirks. He's polarizing. Is Shane... I guess he's polarizing. I don't think his personality's for everybody. And he does say that. He says, I find Beamer wholesomely corny, but he means well. If you're into rah-rah energy and bad dad jokes, he's just the coach for you. Okay, so I'm sorry. Did I miss where – because I love a good dad joke.
Yeah, I do too. I mean,
did I miss where Shane's up there cracking dad jokes?
I don't see that. I don't know.
I think there's other coaches in the SEC that are pretty good at that. I've never heard Shane even tell a joke.
No.
Has Shane ever told a joke in a press conference ever?
I don't think so.
Has Shane ever told a joke in an interview? I listen to most of them. Somebody bring me a joke Shane Beamer's ever told.
He's typically all business, right? I mean, this guy is like myopically focused on keeping the external narrative where he wants it to be. And levity is not really in that mix.
He does. I mean, he's friendly. But I've never known, you know, Shane's not like a guy that gets up there and tells jokes.
I mean, right. Yeah. He's not going to hand out one-liners.
Much less dad jokes. There's not a lot of one-liners. You know, he is enthusiastic. There is rah-rah energy. A lot of coaches are like that, though. I mean, fine. You don't like the rah energy, fine. But don't throw your own personal, because you could tell. All right, so you remember when I said Kevin O'Sullivan has a tail?
Yeah.
All right. Kevin O'Sullivan doesn't actually have a tail.
No, right? Okay? Oh, no.
He's not actually a reptile.
Damn, okay? I thought that was Scoop.
But, yeah, so, but I'm not going to go right. Kevin O'Sullivan's a great coach. If you like coaches with a tail.
That's right.
But you got to say something true. If you like coaches who are buttholes and have a tail. Ooh. I mean, so right off the bat, fact free is his act wearing thin at South Carolina following another seesaw season. I don't think there was anything seesaw about last season.
Oh, no, this was more
hell
like.
No, it was 4-8. Oh. They beat two teams with a pulse, Virginia Tech and Kentucky, and two little in-state guys, and that was it. There's nothing seesaw about last season.
No.
Now, has his entire tenure been seesaw? Have there been seesaw seasons? Yes.
Right.
8 losses in their final 10 games. So right there, this is poor writing. A seesaw is what, Phil?
That would be up and down.
Back and forth, up right?
And down.
Not 8 losses in your final freaking 10.
No.
You know? Going on. All right, so this is all right, too. Beamer has called South Carolina's dream job, and despite a disastrous 2025 season, he didn't chase the golden parachute that was the Virginia Tech opening. All right, so this is fact-free.
Right.
Bullsh crap, okay? This is bullshit. It's not true. Okay. Shane Beamer. All right. So all right. Let's look this up. When did James Franklin get hired at Virginia Tech? I believe this was before the season even.
I think it was, but it was late.
November 17th, 2 weeks before the Clemson game. Mm. At that point, dude. Mm. At that point,
you're playing.
I believe South Carolina just blown the lead against A&M.
Yeah.
And so way before he was announced, James Franklin was going to Virginia Tech. So despite the bad season at the time when this job was filled, South Carolina could have still respectably got to a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you beat A&M, you play better against Clemson. You know, I mean, so that's just fake. That's actually taking a shot, because you know, you're not supposed to really talk about, make stuff up about coaches pursuing other jobs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean,
and they'd say despite the bad season, the disastrous season.
I mean, even his little subheading here, you coach at South Carolina to get fired. Hey, newsflash, in the Power Four, all of the jobs are like that. You're not taking, you know, pick one. What's a middle of the road Big 12 team? You're not coaching at Kansas, right? to either move on to a different program or no, it's kind of like The Sopranos. This thing that we do ends one of two ways. And not everybody, a vast majority of coaches do not get to Nick Saban their way out.
No, not at all.
No, you're either getting fired at this level. I mean, this is not the group of five or six, whatever they want to call it anymore. You know, the fact remains, when you take over a Power Four job, you either excel or you don't leave.
And sometimes you're mired in mediocrity, and sometimes it happens quickly. Yeah.
Right.
And South Carolina's fired one coach since 1998. When was 19? That's what I met you, Phil. Good old year.
That's right.
28 years ago.
28 years.
They fired Brad Scott, and then they fired Will Muschamp during the pandemic. And that's it. You know, nobody forced Steve Spurrier out. Nobody forced Lou Holtz out. You know, I mean, get your facts. You coach at South Carolina to get fired. That sounds like something coaches used to say in the 90s about the program, and they were exactly right.
Right.
I mean, you don't even have to have respect. Just look it up, dude. There's AI and Google. There's all kinds of technology.
I feel bad I clicked on this thing so that I could actually read it.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm all for throwing, you know, I'll give 10 bucks to the guy, the wino on the corner. I mean, I'm all for the sharing economy, Phil. The loss at A&M, you know, so here we go. He still hasn't fixed this error. It's all about the A&M loss. Up 30-0 going into halftime.
No.
I mean, it's not a small insignificant error, though.
No, it's not.
Because it wasn't 30-0. You could have easily looked that score up, but you didn't because you're a moron.
No.
You know, and talked about Beamer peacocking his way into the locker room. Yeah, probably a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I mean, that's fair.
All coaches have moments they could probably look back on and be like, I probably could have done that better.
Yeah, at 3-7, surprising to some that South Carolina didn't fire Beamer the next day. Well, no, it's surprising to nobody that knows anything about Jeremiah Donati or South Carolina football.
Right.
You know, that wasn't surprising to anybody. Mm-mm. Nobody. It would have been surprising had they actually done it.
Right. Yeah. It would have been more, that'd been shocking.
You know, and so then they come up with this real money to retain Sellers and Stewart, blah, blah, blah. Look, man, they got Sellers and Stewart for about what they paid them last year. You know, nobody knows. They speculate that Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart were just out the door had they not forked out all this money. It's a stupid narrative and it's wrong. I can forgive for that, though, because there's no NIL.
Right. There is no real database you can access for that.
So, you know, he's talking about Beamer saying high expectations. So then they want to bring up the history. One conference championship, winning the ACC. The Gamecocks have never had a head coach voluntarily leave for a better job. You coach at South Carolina to get fired. But what he doesn't know is, you know, Spurrier could have left for Auburn. He could have left for Alabama. He could have left for Miami. Lou Holtz could have left for – Lou Holtz, after year three, could have gotten another job if he wanted to. I look, Joe Morrison was offered the Arizona State job in 1984 or after 84 and turned it down. Is that some kind of threshold this program has to cross for the coach to leave for a better job?
I'm surprised he didn't throw in that they, you know, it was like coaches would rather die than move on. Like, you know what I mean?
Right? I mean, you know, I get it. I totally get it. But you know, to me, so you've thrown in a personal attack about dad jokes because you don't even understand that he never tells dad jokes. You can't get the score right of the A&M game. You want to bring up the history, but you don't really know the history because you said nobody's gotten fired. One guy's gotten fired in 30 years, right? You know, Only South. All right. So then here's another fact-free error. The Gamecocks started 2-3. And he said he spoke openly to his wife that he could lose his job. Only South Carolina had a crazy Cocktober and eventually won 7 straight. So this is somebody trying to be a clever writer and again, yeah, lives a fact-free existence. Because that winning streak started, if you remember, Cocktober did not go that well, and it hasn't for years.
No, it's been okay, like,
that is a myth.
Yeah.
Cocktober is a myth. You saw something on Twitter, maybe from Josh Pate.
That's right. You saw and Josh
Bogarted Pate. It and you know, just assimilate, took it for your own and threw it in here because it sounded good, right? Soundbite. In writing, jeez, doesn't make it a crazy Cocktober. Nice use of alliteration, butthole. And eventually won 7 straight. Guess what else, Phil? Guess what else?
What else?
We've got more fact errors, buddy.
Oh, my goodness.
I hate to bring this to you. I hate to just roll this out, Philip.
This guy needs.
They didn't start 2-3. They started 3-3. They beat Old Dominion, Kentucky, right, and Akron.
Akron.
One look at the schedule could have told you that. And they won 6 straight, not 7 straight. So, I just didn't even look at the schedule. Because it was
4 games in November. And,
then there was no crazy Cocktober. Oklahoma was at the end of Cocktober. The rest, it was like, you know, November.
Yeah.
November Shane.
November Shane.
So he's trying to be cool. Is his coaching tenure cooked? Way to go, bro.
Yeah, I saw it. It's cooked. No matter what happens.
Conceivably, Carolina could return to capture its 2024 Sandstorm magic. Maybe they do bounce big and surprise people. David Pollock is pushing some dares. They got dudes. If you buy into the ball, yeah, he goes on and says it's positive. And then he goes and Bogart's returning production, some stat. Really good, less heralded players like corner Vicari Swain. This is the offensive line, maybe decent. The Gamecocks have paid elsewhere to beef up the roster. So it's just not all about money. It's stupid. Listen to this. I'm not the biggest Kendall Browse believer, but he's an absolute upgrade over Mike Shula. Okay, so I get it. Maybe Kendall doesn't run the type of offense. I mean, you're a Florida grad. You should be praying for someone like Kendall Browse to go down there and fix that mess.
Yeah.
What's wrong? You know, what's the big problem with him? You know, it doesn't even explain that. And then he says it feels like, South Carolina's preseason win total sits at 6.5 for a reason. Okay, so let me just explain this.
I mean, yeah.
Is Georgia not going to win 10 games this year? Going to win 10 games? Because these are over-under win totals.
Right.
I'm shocked it's at 6.5. Because a lot of times it's based on last year.
It opened at 5.5. I was like, I get boom, it. I get it. 6.5.
So wish casting, though. That's another clever word. I think.
Yeah, I saw that. I've never thesaurus, seen that.
Good juice of the thesaurus. The volatility. All right. So much of the same game changing talent won a single SEC game a year ago. Okay. Sellers, Stewart, and Harbor and Beamer himself have been defined by their maddening inconsistencies. Doesn't get into why. Doesn't talk about the back injury. Doesn't talk about Harbor's not inconsistent, man. It's just been a slow growth. I mean, he adds a little every year. The reality is, Beamer needs to start 4-1. To have any hope of seeing Christmas in Columbia. Oh, alliteration.
Yeah, Christmas. Hercules.
Love that. That's great.
He's heavy on that too, man.
Some moron that's judging an APSE contest that doesn't know anything about sports, that's judging a sports, would love to read that.
This sounds great.
The Gamecocks host Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Georgia in the back half of the year, with trips to Florida, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Clemson sandwich between. Oh, yeah, it's the SEC, everybody else has that. They also played Alabama in September, a team they've blown fourth-quarter leads against. No one expects South Carolina to contend for a playoff spot this fall. That's another inaccuracy. he would have been more accurate had he kind of taken another shot at Shane and said, except Shane Beamer.
Except Shane Beamer.
He right. went on the record exactly. to say it. But even getting to bowl eligibility is a coin flip. Okay, so it's a coin flip. All right, so let me just roll this at you, Phil. South Carolina plays Towson.
That's a win, probably.
Kent. Kentucky. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'll give them that.
Arkansas.
Yeah, probably.
Mississippi State. So they play Towson and Kent, three of the bottom teams in the SEC.
I would argue that's five games that you're going to be not heavily, but at least
you should win.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so that means you're not going to win a single other game. You're not going to beat Clemson. Not going to beat Tennessee at home, which you have six out of the last eight. You know, no chance to beat A&M at home for the third straight time. I understand it's the SEC. It's tough. But, you know, that's bold, you know. The Gamecocks, and then I guess he tries to, South Carolina stands as the only SEC job available next cycle. Ultimately, you really have to squint to see a way Beamer coaches his way off the hot seat. Whether South Carolina bounces back in 2026 history, both the schools and Beamer's suggest the job won't be his much longer no matter what. So let's back up here. You just went through this whole thing about even-numbered years and how he was really good in even-numbered years, but the history suggests he won't bounce back and you have to squint to do it.
He even made reference to a stat that actually has a direct implication on success, which is you're ranked fifth nationally in returning production. Let's not consider that.
I mean, I'm just sorry. And look, if I hadn't unfortunately come across this guy's stuff before, and it's been downright moronic about other schools too. Here's a good rule, and I don't consider myself a journalist anymore, but I do have journalism training, and I did work in journalism. And I said this on coffee this morning, and I'll say it again. I had a great editor at the Gainesville Times, a guy named Mickey Johnson, Vietnam vet, huge Democrat, like huge. Like that was during the Kerry and Bush.
Bro, yeah.
Right. I can't believe they pulled out these swift boat things. You know, he's one of those guys. Yeah, we got along great. He taught me a lot about column writing because he wrote a column in Gainesville, Georgia, as a liberal Democrat. Okay. He said, JC, here's the thing. He taught like this. He's a Marshall fan. Go hurt Mickey Johnson. He said, I just want to tell you this right now. He said, you can say, have an opinion, anything you want, man. But the bottom line is you got to be fair. You have to be fair. And you're fair by having a command of the facts and communicating those. Not everybody's going to agree. But above all things else, be fair. And that stuck with me, and I've never written anything that's unfair. I can honestly say I may have written things that are stupid. I may have looked back on some of my opinions on players, and I shouldn't have written that. I may have said some things that were probably on the radio or on a show, on a podcast, and in hindsight, I think it's unfair, but I've never written anything like that. And this guy, because of his blatant disregard for facts and the failure to do it, well, there's a reason he has a Substack and he's not on anything else.
And he's not widely published.
And maybe that's not fair, but I don't think you have to be fair with someone like this who's a disgrace.
No,
it's a disgraceful thing that you would write things, you know, without even taking just to kind of, you know, tinkle all over people. And that's a big problem in media these days, is people just want to take shots and stir the pot. And it's okay to do that. You can make a lot of money doing that. You can be really good. But you know what? The guys that stir the pot that are good at it, they know what, Phil? What do they have a command of?
They have a command of the facts.
Like Paul Feinbaum said, probably the same general thing that this guy said.
Yeah.
But I understand, because who you're going to talk about being on the hot seat. Okay, fine.
Okay.
And yeah. I'm not sitting here saying that Beamer does not need to have a good year. I think that's clear. I think everybody realizes that. You know, Helen Keller would realize that right now.
Take you a while to get the point across, but she'd get it.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have wasted all that time on it.
It's all right. Listen, man.
But yeah, I can just sit here and say I disagree. Screw that guy.
That's not true.
But I kind of like to explain why. I want to spit out the facts and explain why I'm being hurt. Yeah, Lauren points out in the chat box, we fans can hate on our team, but not you, outsider, buddy.
Yeah, that's right.
not you.
Not you.
Everybody wants to give everybody a pass if they're in the media. Oh, you're in the media. You're the First Amendment and all that. Yeah, you do. And others that have the First Amendment to say, this is trash. And this is the problem. You don't just get a free pass to write and say whatever the hell you want without.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing.
You have the right to say it. You shouldn't get in trouble for it, legally. But criticism, you need to be able to take the criticism too.
But not getting your facts straight is a way to get a journalist in hot water.
It's ridiculous. I mean, dude, I just went through like 8 things that a simple Google search would have told you. I wrote 40 things about Gamecock football from memory the other day. And the one thing I was about to screw up, I thought the 2003 Florida game, or I thought the 03 Florida game was in 02. 03, Carolina almost beat them at home. They lost by 2 points. And then lost to Clemson the next week terribly.
Yeah.
I thought that game was in 02 because I was remembering the Pollock game for Georgia. And the Clemson game that year, and 02 was kind of close, and I almost threw Florida in there, but that wasn't the case. We lost to Florida 28-7. But I looked it up.
Right.
And if I made one of the errors like he made, I would be – I get upset with myself, Phil. I get embarrassed.
I would, too. I'd be like – I double-check stuff all the time. And I mean, I don't want to make a mistake. Hold on. Let me look at it right quick.
Yeah. I mean, we have all this technology now. There's no excuse.
No.
So, as the great Mickey Johnson once said, I don't even know if Mickey's still alive. I know he's out there somewhere with our paper got bought by a bunch of morons. And Mickey ended up, it was owned by USA Today, Gannett at the time. And Gannett sold it to this horrible company. I went to Rivals and got online shortly after that. But he went to Pensacola as an assistant editor. I hadn't heard from him since. So I hope he's well. If you're out there, Mickey, appreciate you, buddy. Go Herd. Go Marshall Thundering Herd. For the Mad Dog, Phil Mullinax, this is J.C. Sherbert. Hope you enjoyed my rant today. It's Wide Open Wednesday tomorrow, so I'll catch up on the chat box. I just wanted to kind of dismantle that little piece of propaganda that's out there. I'm not going to do that for every one of them because there'll be more. But that one pisses me off just because every time I read something from this guy, it's a joke. And it's like, and maybe somebody, some producer from Feinbaum or somebody, because he goes on Feinbaum. Like, so maybe somebody will hear this and go, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't give credibility to this dude with a Substack that can't get his freaking facts straight. I'm just hopeful that I can change the world in that.
Well, probably there's only so many Alabama callers, you know.
I know. Oh, I'm just going to tell you this. Right now. Caleb DeBoer. God love him. I can't wait to go down for that. I can't wait to be back in Alabama. I love Alabama. All right, for him, Bill, as JC, y'all have a wonderful, terrible Tuesday, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.